Hi, my name is Pam, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I want to thank the Serenity and the Sierras Committee for inviting me to share some of my story with you, and wanted to try to share as much courage, strength, and hope as I can. I'd actually like to take a moment to help myself ground myself, but also for anyone who'd like to participate, just to get us into the present, and just by taking three big deep breaths. So I'll just be quiet through that, and so if you want to join me. So thank you. I am very envious of a couple of the previous speakers at this conference that can come up here, just wing it. I've got papers, I've got notes. So I'm hoping I can kind of make it through without reading too much. But the other thing is that I have very few one-liners that everybody laughs at. So hopefully you all got to laugh last night and today at lunchtime, and I've put some people in there. I say, just laugh randomly to help me. and then possibly through the presentation, you might be able to get a grade for my spouse. Those of you who were here last night will probably know what I'm talking about. So I will let you grade him. Anyway, that was a one-liner, so you can laugh. I'm very nervous. We moved to Wisconsin in 2016, and Al-Anon meetings are everywhere, and they're all a little bit different, but we do not really do speaker meetings there, so I have not had an opportunity to be in front of a group of people and even just do an individual share. We just always usually do a topic, and then everybody just goes around and shares for like 3 or 5 minutes. So this is a little different for me, not having done this for quite a while. So there's so many possibilities of where to start, and we all have amazing stories that we could stand up here and talk about. I was at the morning meeting this morning, and there's so much that we learn from being in these rooms. But first I wanted to just qualify myself for being in these rooms. I am the oldest adult child of an alcoholic. My mom drank through many years of my life. I am the wife of a recovering alcoholic. I'm the mother of 4 children, all whom have experimented in one way or another for short periods or longer periods with drugs and alcohol. And I am a woman who's finally realized that I have the right and the responsibility to take care of myself and learn how to live my life to the fullest. And I still fervently wish for a magic wand that could help solve all the problems of the world. But of course, I know that that's not possible. And I finally have come to a place where I accept more that my growth and experiences that I've had in my life, through Al-Anon, I've been able to realize that those challenges and losses in my life are actually gifts that my higher power has given me to really be able to experience life and grow more spiritually and emotionally, and find ways to move through my life with more patience, awareness, acceptance, and serenity. In preparing for being here, I reflected a lot on what would my Al-Anon birthday be. And I still don't really have a date, and you'll probably kind of understand why as I talk a little bit more. But I really feel that I've had 3 books or chapters of my Al-Anon life, very different times in my life, things that have been going on to have brought me into these rooms. So I'll just share a little bit of how I got here. And so in the late 60s, early 70s, I found that my mom was drinking a lot. I was, you know, like I said, the oldest child, and you know, there were behavioral things that were going on with my mom and between my mom and my dad. And then I don't really remember how I realized that it was alcohol. I do know that in middle school, I started somehow to find empty bottles of liquor in the garbage cans on Thursday mornings. And so that was the day of our pickup. And so I started to see that. Where they were the rest of the week, I don't really know. But started to see that she was drinking more, and found, you know, mom and dad were just fighting almost every night around dinner. And I have coined it for myself as the mashed potato syndrome. And whenever we would have dinner together, whether the it would, you know, the potatoes would be too lumpy, they'd be too runny, they would be cold, they would be too hot. And if, so it, there was always something that was wrong my dad would be complaining about. And so as a result, they would end up getting into a fight. And my dad was very loud, very angry, never violent physically, but, and I remember saying to myself, I will never be angry. I will never be angry, because I hated how he would express his dismay in the family. So I, as the oldest adult child, I of course had to start taking care of my younger siblings sometimes. Mom went back to school to become a teacher. And so I would go out on my bike. I grew up in Wisconsin, so I'd go up on my out on my bike into the cornfields and just ride until it was dark out and until I knew that everybody was asleep at home. I was a great student, all A's, really involved in extracurricular activities. I could can really see how that fed my desire for perfectionism, wishing to be in control and thinking that I could be in control. Because if I just kept doing all these things, everything would somehow manage to click and come together. There was no mention of AA, there was no mention of Al-Anon. I don't think we really even took that elephant and put it in the living room. You know, it was just like somewhere creeping around the house. And so it was never talked about. As I prepared to complete high school, it was like, okay, now what? You know I need to get out of here. I need to get away from home. And so I did leave home to go to college, but still stayed only about an hour and a half away. Maybe the control issues, maybe worrying about my siblings, I'm not exactly sure. But I did, you know, go to a small private school and started college. I was going to be an elementary and special ed teacher, following my mom's footsteps, but didn't stay. Found that I needed to do something, needed to be out there doing something, and being in college was not allowing me to go off and start my life per se. So after a year and a half, I ended up in Arizona for a short period of time on the Navajo Indian Reservation. Then went on to California, and I did meet a guy out in California. And so at about 21, I was on a Greyhound bus crossing the country all by myself back to Wisconsin to kind of tell my parents that I was going to go live in California. And so bought a used car, made a little bit of money, and headed back across the country in my own car. We lived together for a few years and then broke up probably in the late 1970s. And over those next 7 or 8 years, I did go back to college, finished my bachelor degree, but continued to find myself unhappy and disconnected with people. I tried therapy because I was going to, I needed to figure myself out. But I would run the other way when anybody would mention that maybe some of your issues are connected to your mom's drinking. And I just refused to open that can of worms. It was just, I was pretty alienated from my family back in Wisconsin by that time. And but was not willing or interested in looking at any of the core issues. My youngest sister did take me to a meeting once in Wisconsin, and I sat in that meeting. It was a very small meeting, maybe about, probably about this number of people, like that size table. And it was, it was older women. And they were knitting. And little did I know that I would be one of those older women being there. I just don't take the knitting yet. I was critical. I was like, this isn't for me. I don't see how this could ever benefit me. So I continued kind of, you know, dabbing my feet into different things, trying to kind of find a thing that would, something that would help make my life better. But then in about 1985, I met the man who is currently my husband. He was still married to someone else, but that didn't seem to matter at all. We dated for a number of months before I learned that he had an addiction, alcohol issues. When I did learn that, I couldn't believe it, but I figured I can take care of this. I can fix him. I can get him to stop. And that I could cure and control him. All those things that we learn in Al-Anon, you know, we're not able to do. But I had had a small car accident, and I had a little bit of money. And so I was going to send him to rehab. He was still married to this other lady, but I was going to be the savior. And so a good friend took me to my first meeting, probably kicking and screaming. And I remember being in there and probably hearing nothing except no answer for me about how I was going to be able to get him into rehab. And so that is where I would begin my first Al-Anon book, was back in 1985 approximately. And so I was helped by so many of you in those rooms to start reading the literature, staying in meetings, and learning the steps and the traditions and the principles. And little by little, I did get to understand that he had a disease, that I was powerless over being able to cure that, and that he needed to decide if he wanted to take those first steps for his own recovery. I realized, came to realize that I was also a sick individual, that I was doing some behaviors that were pretty sick. I would drive by his house a couple times every day, the house where he lived with the wife that he was still married to. And I knew his mom well, and so when his mom would say, oh, he's out on the streets or whatever, you know, I would be driving around trying to find him. And there were, of course, no cell phones back then, thank goodness, because otherwise, you know, I would have been texting him or tracking him or something. But I was continuing to go to meetings and slowly came to understand more about my own illness, my character traits. You know, we talk about character defects. I sometimes think of my traits as traits because some of our defects are things that we've had to deal with things in our lives in certain ways so that we could make it through our lives. So they're traits. But I found a little better understanding of what that meant for my life and how I was using them somewhat negatively to try to make it through. But I finally got to, I stopped answering the telephone. There were answering machines then, and so I just unplugged the answering machine. And so I wouldn't answer the telephone. I probably went for about 6 months without answering my phone. If somebody, I had a roommate, and so if, you know, they could find out who it was. I started making slashes on my calendar of the number of days I could go without driving by his house. So it'd be the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and try to get as many of those as I could. And then, of course, when I broke down and drove by his house, then, of course, I had to start all over again. But it was a neat thing at the end of the day to be able to make a slash. And then I took index cards and wrote out all kinds of the Al-Anon slogans and plastered them all over the dashboard of my car and the mirror in my bathroom. And because I needed to have that visual reminders of all of the information in our books and from all of you. Didn't quite have a relationship with a higher power yet at that time. So, you know, I started to learn some things, heard the word detachment, the powerlessness, the control, the lack of control. Started to realize that I did have some rights. I could do some things that I needed to do or wanted to do for myself. Did make some new friends. So I stayed around the rooms, but I can now be honest with myself and with all of you that I was still there to try to figure it out. I was still there to try to figure out how he could be fixed. Even though I was not in touch with him, it was like I was still going to find this answer so that when I did see him again, you know, I would be able to take care of him. I didn't do the steps at that time. I tried on 3 different sponsors, but I also know that I received a lot during those first years. When he finally began his sobriety, I stayed. So he began his sobriety. After not answering the phone for 6 months, I thought, I'm safe. He's not going to call me anymore. I turned the answering machine back on, turned the phone on. Guess who the first phone call was from? How did he know that I was ready to start answering the phone? So anyway, we met for ice cream and talked a little bit. And he said, yeah, I've been sober for a little bit. And I said, okay, great. You know, we'll make this work. So, but we both continued our own meetings. We did a couples recovery group for a long time. Every year at his birthday anniversary, we had Hell on Wheels. And his birthday is in August. And so the first few years, it was like almost 6 weeks, you know, like about 4 weeks before the birthday and 2 weeks afterwards, where he was just crazy. And then it began to get a little bit shorter, you know. So we're in August right now, so we'll see what happens. But anyway, you know, we tried to just kind of, we worked the program somewhat together. You know, we did our own programs and then, like I said, the couple one. And so after about 10 years of him being sober, it was like, okay, well, good. This is good. We've got this going and everything's going to be fine. And so at about that time, we moved from the Bay Area up to Coarse Gold. And so it was like, I don't need meetings. He can go, he needs to go, but I don't need to go. And so some of the excuses of mine were that, yeah, we had moved. I didn't know anybody. You know, living in Coarse Gold, kind of there was one meeting over there that I didn't like at the time. I visited it a couple of times. I didn't like it. I was working in Fresno, raising 3 kids by that time. And it was just easier to stay at home. And I would once in a while read a few things, write some, go to nature, go to a meeting once in a while. And I did do some therapy, but started to build up a lot of anger towards my children and my spouse. I really found it easy to blame my spouse and my children for any of the anger that I had. And all of a sudden realizing I had this anger that I had told myself as a kid I would never have. I was going to prevent myself from feeling angry. And of course, that's not realistic, especially with life and with raising children. And so in about 2005, 3 of my children were becoming teenagers, and my life started falling apart again. And the 2 boys that we had adopted were now 12 and 13, And along with the issues of being adopted, they were failing school, they were behavior problems at school. We were very frequently receiving visits from the Madera County sheriffs. And I got to a point where I would cringe every time I saw a sheriff car on Highway 41 and in Yosemite Lakes Park, because I knew that they were coming to my house. My daughter didn't receive very much of my attention. I can now look back and realize that so much of my life was focused on the behavior of these boys. And my daughter was a great student, beautiful girl, dancer. She had it together. She, like, you know, and I didn't realize any of this until even a few years ago. You know, she didn't, somewhere in there was like, she didn't really need me. She needed me so much, and I wasn't there for her. So I tried to balance everything, but I didn't take enough time for anything. I look back and realize that I just didn't take time with my husband, my children, or friends. I tried to read all of their minds, but even if I could read it, I didn't really act like my daughter. You know, I mean, it would have been nice if I had been able to read her mind enough to know that, you know, maybe she needed some mom and daughter time. Hope that they could read mine. Oh, my husband, I really expected him to read mine. I had a lot of expectations. I hadn't really read a lot about expectations yet by that time, you know, to kind of see that the expectations are the resentments waiting to happen. And I had a lot of the anger, the dismay, worry, fears, despair, a sense of loss, inadequacy, depression, resentment towards others that didn't have those issues. These families that, you know, they didn't have any kids that were having any problems. They weren't married to a man who was an alcoholic and had to go to recovery meetings. Now, of course, I'm a little bit more mature to realize that we all have, there's always something, probably for most of us, that is in our lives. But once again, with my teenagers, I wanted to fix them. I was experiencing intense desperation as I watched them going down their pathways, and I couldn't control them. Realized I was powerless, and found myself going back to Al-Anon again. So that was my second chapter of my recovery time. Started to understand a little bit more about feelings. I still, as a family, my family of origin, we didn't talk about feelings. I remember the first time that I can remember my dad telling me that he loved me. I was already about 20 or 21. I was in the Milwaukee airport, getting on a plane to come back out to here where I lived, and you know, he said, "I love you." And he had never said that before. So I didn't grow up with being able to have any idea of what feelings were. I used to, the internet was coming into play at that point, so I went on the internet and I put in the word feelings. All that I had known about was happy, sad, glad, mad. And yeah, sometimes that would help work. But I would go to the internet, print out these lists of feelings, and try to be able to figure out what it was that I was feeling, because I didn't know. I didn't know. A lot of fighting with my spouse, with the kids, and I did have a lot of, I didn't identify my role in some of the situations. I didn't want to take responsibility for my part in certain things. It was much easier to blame him and tell him that, you know, he needed to go to more meetings and everything would be fine. So I really had a lot of envy of those perfect lives as I watched my kids tumble and my marriage crack. Didn't have a lot of understanding about acceptance or pausing. Though that was all still to come. That really wasn't until my third book of Al-Anon, which would be the... So finally, though, from 2005 to 2016, during those years up here, I did start coming to meetings and really developed a family of women that could understand, you know, where I was and what I was dealing with, because you guys, you know, have been there and gone through it and knew the book a lot better than me. So I worked the steps with a group of women, attended regular meetings, read literature regularly, started to develop a better understanding of what Al-Anon really was and the tools that were here in the rooms, in the literature, that I could benefit from. And really started to accept the fact that I didn't have control, that I was powerless, and that I needed to continue looking at my own issues, issues of perfectionism, other things that had directed me for so many years. Just two short stories to kind of show some of my progress. Again, not perfection, but my daughter really wanted to go to UC Santa Barbara to go to college. I really wanted her to go to Fresno State. And I would drive from our house down to Fresno 3-4 days a week to go to work, and I would rehearse my next conversation with my daughter about why she should go to Fresno State, all the way from my house, all the way to Fresno, and all the way back. And I realized finally that I was clenching my jaw so much, and I would get to work with this horrible headache. It took me months to figure out what I was doing to myself. And so I was finally, and realized how many fruitless hours I had spent trying to convince her to do what I wanted her to do. She didn't go to Fresno State. She went to UC Santa Barbara. She thrived. She was happy. And you know, I can look back now and say that's what needed to happen. It was one of those things that I had mentioned before, you know, those events in our lives that we don't know why they're happening. But hopefully we can at some point be able to look back and say, this is why, and this is what I've learned from it. We had one of our two boys who loved to run away, along with lots of other things. But so the one boy I think was in juvenile hall at the time, and this one was running away, and he had a girlfriend. And so we were trying to kind of control the running away. And so, but I was doing better. You know, it was like, I'm not gonna stay up every night, all night long to make sure he doesn't run away. He was so sneaky. He was so sneaky. So I went to bed one night, and I don't know what my husband was doing. Later I realized one of the things that he did. But anyway, so I went sleeping, and the phone rang about midnight. Picked it up, and it was the mother of this girl telling me that her daughter was gone, and of course she was with my son, and where were they, and blah, 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 blah. What are you gonna do about it, kind of thing, directed towards me. And I said, you know what, I'll go check and see if he's in his room, but other than that, you know, there's not much I can do. So I left the bedroom, walked down the hallway. Our house was kind of separated, one set of bedrooms over here and one set of bedrooms over here, and so I walked down towards the other hallway, only to be stopped by a string that was, you know, put between two things here to stop people from going down this second hallway. I go, what's this all about? Well, by that time, I think my husband had woken up, and he said, well, that's so that we know if Nikki leaves the house. Well, guess what? My husband forgot that there's two other doors to the outside back deck down the hallway where he slept. Of course he used one of the other doors. So it was like, okay, well, it's now, you know, 12:30 at night. I'm not going out looking for him. I'm not gonna be able to find him. I was able to go back to sleep. I was like, wow, you know, that was some growth. That was some progress for me. I discovered the word gratitude and gratefulness And I was starting to become superbly grateful for the rooms of Al-Anon, for the literature, for the friends that I had met. And I could even sometimes say I am grateful to be here in those meetings, or that I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. That took a while because I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to have this stuff going on in my life. By that time, we had, we had adopted another child, and he was now in elementary school, and so I was trying to kind of live my life as a parent a little bit differently. I was developing a better relationship with my daughter by that time. She was, you know, done with college, had come back to live at home for a while, or even when we would just go and visit, you know, being able to enjoy different things with her. But I knew that there was more to learn. So then we made another change. And in 2016, we moved to Wisconsin. I had grown up in Wisconsin, and that was my home. I had always pretty much felt that Wisconsin was my home. Even though I had lived here for 40-odd years, Wisconsin was my home. And so when I could leave a job that I was doing here due to changes at the hospital, my husband is actually the one who said, "Would you like to move back to Wisconsin?" Because I would cry every time we came back from Wisconsin, because it's green there. There's lakes, there's rain, there's my parents. And so we'd fly over, especially in the summer, and, you know, start seeing the smoke from the fires and the brown grass. And so I would get on the internet and try to find my dream house, you know. So my husband said to me, "Would you like to move back to Wisconsin?" My parents are still alive, and so at that point they were probably in their mid-80s or so, and I had missed 40 years of being with them. And by that time, with the help of all of you, I had come to love my parents again and miss them a lot. And so I didn't think he really wanted to do that, and so I, you know, didn't start looking for homes yet. And then he came to me a couple months later and he said, "Well, so have you found our home yet in Wisconsin?" I said, "Are you serious?" And he said yes, that he was willing to do that. And so we moved and lived, you know, we live like 7 minutes from them because they've now needed to move into an assisted living kind of environment. But initially it was about 45 minutes away, so it was perfect. You know, I could get to their house, visit for the day, and then be able to get home back to my home. But again, of course, I figured, well, I don't have to worry about the Madera County Sheriffs anymore coming up the road. I don't have to go to the courts anymore. The two boys, one was in prison, one was someplace, we didn't even know where. My daughter had found the man of her dreams, and so she was staying here, much to my chagrin. And the other guy, the little guy, was 10 years old, so he was easy to uproot. I said, "Come on, we're going to Wisconsin." So I again took a hiatus from my meetings. And I was a slow learner to realize how important all of you are, my readings, my higher power. But at that time, it only took probably less than a year to start to find the meetings that I wanted to go to in the central Wisconsin where we were. So at that point, that's my third book of Al-Anon. And so now I've, you know, stayed with meetings, meet with a lot of folks outside of the meetings, and then COVID hit. But I have to say that for me, we did most of our meetings by Zoom, and it actually allowed me to go to even more meetings, to have face-to-face Zoom meetings sometimes with some of the people that that I knew, and to really start doing more of my step work. Finally found a sponsor in Wisconsin and started to really look at all those parts of me, of my recovery of my life that I still needed to look at. So, because what I was realizing is that each of those times that I had started going to program earlier, the first one was for my husband, the second one was for my teenagers, my mom kind of thrown in there, around there. This time it was going to be for me. I was the one that knew that I was still quite angry and dismayed by a lot of things, and it was going to have to be something that I dealt with, that I did the change with. And realizing that some of those issues that continue to come back and haunt us, they come back because I haven't done the work on them. I haven't looked at it enough to really see how I need to change. So I found about a couple of years ago, I finally had started doing some meditation, some yoga, much with the assistance of my daughter, who, even though she had grown up, you know, without active alcoholism in the home, because her father had been clean and sober prior to even her conception, she didn't have a role model of me doing a lot of real personal work on myself. But she has found her tools to grow and become a wonderful mother to my beautiful grandson. And then she has been able to share a lot of that with me. So I started meditation, I started yoga, continue going to my meetings, doing my work with my sponsor. And I realized that I was feeling a lot more peace in my life, finally. And I work best with acronyms. And so the word for peace in Spanish is PAZ, P-A-Z. So couldn't quite come up with words that went with that, but I came up with P-A-A-S. And so for me, I found pause, awareness, acceptance, and serenity. And I realized, to start with the pause, I had not had any concept at all of pausing. And in one of my meditations, she talked about that there is a moment of pause as you inhale, before you exhale, and then before you start your next inhale. There's a spot there where nothing is happening. It's a pause. I did not pause for all of those, you know, 35, 40 odd years of parenting, of working, of the other years that I had in Al-Anon. So to learn how to stop and find a sense of quiet, praying, learning that I had the right and kind of a self-responsibility to experience some peace and quiet time. All of those being concepts that I had, like I said, not ever experienced in the past. And coming to a place where I could say, okay, the past is over. I don't know what the future is yet, but I need to stay in the now. I think that, you know, there's this idea, there's a wonderful book, and I can't remember names of books or anything, but, you know, this idea of what time is it? And, you know, sure, it's, you know, 2:15, 2:10, but no, what time is it? It's now. Where are you? Well, I'm in this room with all these people. Okay, but where am I? I'm here. I can be with myself. So I have a poster kind of a thing at home. Yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, and today is a gift. There's a quote from Odette. I also wanted to share, when my spirit is in turmoil and my troubled thoughts race around and around and I try to reason myself out of this frame of mind, it may be well to stop reasoning and hold fast to a single idea that speaks of quiet and serenity. So that was my first wonderful realization that I could pause. Then through that pause, I was able to start becoming aware of things. Finally became aware more of who I am, who I was, but who I wish to be. And another quote from Odette, I've come to realize that I cannot change conditions by running away from them. I can only change my point of view about them and their relation to me. And this can be done only by changing myself. So trying to find time to become more curious, to wonder, to become more amazed by things, to turn to my higher power and be grateful. The concept of gratitude, like I kind of mentioned before, was foreign to me too. So to realize that I could be grateful for things and how many things there were to be grateful for, even in the midst of the chaos. So some of those wonderful things. Really starting to understand that acronym ODAT, you know, one day at a time. I think the morning speaker mentioned, you know, sometimes 1 hour at a time or 1 minute at a time. And sometimes that's all I could do is 1 minute at a time just to get through, you know, something. I became much more aware that Al-Anon is a spiritual program that gives me a power greater than myself that can help to guide me, to help me to have an open mind and courage and confidence to face life's realities if I allow it to. So those simple concepts have become a part of my daily prayer. Please help me, guide me, give me that open mind that I need to confront anything in front of me and the courage and confidence to try to do what my great spirit might be helping me to hear. Also really said to my, was able to say to myself, Al-Anon is a program of personal development. A program that has many stages, many pathways that do not always go in the same direction. Sometimes I find myself going 3 steps in one direction and 2 steps back. But if I can continue trying to do the 1 step from that, I might be able to make some progress. And our program is a program whose core was the right use of my mind as well as my heart. And that's in Hope for Today. From there, I could come to accept. Once I could become more aware of things that were going on around me, I could come to a better place of acceptance. And although I still lament some things from the past, I could find better ways of accepting myself and how I had lived my life, because I knew that I was making changes and I could live my life better and do things in a different way so that I would have less amends to make in the future as I went forward. Realizing that this too shall pass, the different situations. Right now, you know, my one son I have no contact with at all. The other one, random, got out of jail again in January. But, you know, I'm powerless over that, and I can accept that at a better level. And sometimes I realize I can only acquiesce. I had to look up that word. That came up in a meeting once. But sometimes I'm only acquiescing something, accepting something reluctantly without protest. But sometimes I can actually truly accept it, believing or coming to recognize something as valid or correct. So it can go both ways for me still. So then that has taken me to a place of serenity. And so this is another quote from Hope. Where can it come from? It comes from trusting that everything in my life is exactly as it should be. I feel it when I apply a slogan rather than panic about something. It comes when I choose to care for myself rather than to fix someone else. It surrounds me when I seek God's will in prayer and meditation. And so to come to a place where I can really feel grateful for all the wonderful things that Serenity and this program has brought me. Feeling those moments of peace and quiet, whether it's in my own home. I mean, I can actually be in my own home and feel peaceful and feel serenity. But I also go bike a lot and feel okay in my own skin and my own body, which is new over the last few years. And I am so grateful that I have a higher power that I can ask for that guidance from and turn things over if I am willing to let go. So of course, I'm a work in progress. Progress, not perfection. And that there's no one way to work our program. I can see myself that, you know, that I've had these chapters, these books of my growth and my change, and that I can take what I like and leave the rest, just as wherever we're together today, take what you like and leave the rest. And what I can take with me changes as I grow and learn. And that has, I've just come to really feel that as I put together this presentation and seeing my progress through my years. So should be closing up here. So let's see, I just wanted to kind of, another quote that I love and I just wanted to share this. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And that's in Courage to Change, one of those early pages from Lao Tzu. There's a dear woman in this room who used to always say, or try to remind me, that we don't know what we don't know. And she would say that, and she would say that, and she would say that. And I said, what does that mean? I don't like that phrase. What? I now get it. And it helps me so much. Sometimes my husband is still a little kind of worrying about things, I think sometimes more than I do. And so I can sometimes say to him, you know what, babes, we don't know what we don't know. It's something's gonna happen and then we can deal with it when it happens. But I no longer want to be future tripping and try to figure out what I'm gonna do. Because somebody else shared somewhere, or it was one of those readings, you know, we don't know. We don't know. So let me stay in the now. Let me stay in the present. And having been able to come and learn some of those things from all of you and from my great spirit and our program, that's why I continue to return to Al-Anon, and why I know maybe this time around for in a much stronger way that this is a program that I can keep for the rest of my life. I am a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I want to continue being here with all of you and continuing to learn, because you know I can go to a meeting even when I don't want to go to a meeting, and there's always that tidbit. There's always that little thing that I can take back with me. And whether I use it that day or next week or whenever, it's there. It's there. And of course, my books are just so falling apart and so much tape keeping them together, and so filled with different colors of markers. And I love them. It's like, I probably need some new ones, but I don't need them. I might want a new a new copy of this, but there's so much of my life in here with all these wonderful turned down pages and highlighters. So I will continue coming back, and I again am grateful to be here. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.